Hello everyone, my name is Tyler Common. I want to thank you for tuning in to the main Season 3 of their Miserable Youth web series and these follow-up podcasts showcasing and discussing the creation of their 9th album. At the time of taping this follow-up podcast for their final installment, Episode 5, the band is still deep in the album-building process with both mixing and art direction currently underway. This episode, I discuss the band's final week in the studio and what it looked like with bassist Garrett Nicholson and drummer Pat Kirch. Cool. So this is the last episode of Miserable Youth, Season 3. Aside from what we saw in this episode, where are you guys at in the album process?
Mixing yeah, still
mixing. I think the first episode we were getting the first song that day, and now we have three more to get, Pat? Or four? Three?
Four more that we haven't gotten, yeah. And then we're kind of doing all the revisions on the ones that we have. And yeah, there's two songs that are like totally, totally done. And the other ones were 80 to 90% done, I'd say.
And I assume you're probably setting release dates very soon, or is that something that's on the timeline?
Yeah, working all that out, kind of figuring out the game plan and really we're in the phase of like mapping out now, like, this year into next year, and I think we just announced a show in Brazil, so you know it's kind of like the wheels are beginning to turn again. So
hell yeah, and I saw that sold out. You guys are sellouts now.
Yeah, yep. Freaking, yeah. It sold out in about 5 minutes or something like that. So
it's fucking crazy.
Rad.
It was fun. I didn't even get to post it on the internet because I was in my car, and then by the time I got to the office, it had sold out, and I was like, oh, shit! So it was pretty awesome.
People are really serious about you guys coming to Brazil, I see. So, yeah.
All the people always saying, come to Brazil, it actually, it's true.
Yeah. They showed up. So the episode kind of starts out with you guys like playing with like BB guns. What are those? Like paintball? Oh, I thought they were paintball guns, and I was like, are they BB guns? What are they?
No, they're like water pellets. They're like these little pellets that you soak in water, and then they get bigger, and then they really freaking hurt. We got we played a festival, and whoever like makes the toy guns was a sponsor, and they sent us a bunch of them. So we had them at the studio and just having some fun.
Well, some truth behind the curtain, Pat was like, hey, we can't do a whole other episode on just recording, so let's go shoot little water pellets at each other and make something fun. So it was just a little thing to switch it up, so you're not just getting bombarded with G chords and F chords for 30 minutes.
Yeah. It's true. It was a good intro. I just wanted to know for my personal interest for that one. Yeah. So you guys, you took a break before the final week of studio recording to play some shows in the UK with Yumi at Six. Did stepping back into a live environment shape the final versions of the songs any more than they had already been arranged?
I think I was thinking the whole time that it was like, I think this record's going to be a really fun live album, like to play in front of people. And we had like our roughs, and we would listen to them every once in a while over there. And it was just like, I remember thinking a few times on stage, it's like, oh, I can't wait to play, you know, X song. I think it's going to be really, really a good joy. I kept thinking about that a lot. It was weird to be like in two places in your brain at the same time. It's like you're so working on this one idea for so long, and then like kind of like cutting it, and then going and doing your other part of your job. It was an interesting thing. I don't think we've ever done that before. Have we, Pat, where we've split a record in not in half, but like in a chunk to go play some shows and finish it up after?
Pioneer would have been the closest, I guess, but that was kind of a different scenario.
Yeah. But
that album was just kind of recorded different times. So
I think it mostly gave time for John to finish melodies and lyrics and whatnot, because that's really what came next after. Yesterday, stay up all night at your mother's house. Let's all go down to places to go. When we
And also speaking on John, he talks about the transitional elements between songs and bringing a human element to the record. What can people expect it from this aspect of the album?
Yeah, I mean, we're actually, this is a part now in like the mixing phase where we actually like implement all this stuff into it, and like that's where it gets complicated, where we have to explain like, well, we want 4 seconds of what actually is the ending of this song, but we want it to be on the beginning of the next song, and then right. We're gonna add, but you know, so it gets a little hard to like explain over a text or an email. So yeah, so we are I would say it's definitely in the Love the Lonely vein, where there is transitions and things like that, but like these just kind of naturally happened in the songs, you know, where it's almost like what would have been an interlude on that record is just like a piece that we had written on the song, and then we kind of realized afterwards like, oh, like that is a cool way to go into the next song.
Yeah, I know you spent a long time working on the track listing, and that's like one of the things that is focused on in this episode, and kind of like rearranging what it looks like in the final version of it. How do you feel that the placement of each song impacted the narrative and flow of the album as a whole?
I think it always does pretty drastically. You know, you can hear in this episode where we had a totally different track listing when we went into actually making the record. And then things switched around and kind of songs, you know, a song, How to Exit the Room, like took a total 180. Just in the mood of the song, that it felt like it had a better place earlier in the record instead of later. And so we were kind of flipping things around and I think just finding that good, like, balance. You know, you don't want fast, low, fast, low, fast, low. You want things to feel like a constant mood, and like you, like what comes next is actually what you're wanting to happen. Yeah, it was a lot of time of just like kind of tweaking those things quite a bit. And I think that had to do with the transition stuff too. It was like, some of those things were planned again, like, cause it was just parts we had at ends of songs, but then it ended up working better in a different spot. And we didn't even think about it that way. It just ended up being a cool thing that felt right. These things take a long time, and there's a lot of, you know, going in circles and everyone being saying their idea of what they think is right. But then at the end of the day, you kind of have to come together and be like, okay, that is great. So yeah, it takes a while, and it's a lot of, you know, that's kind of like not the boring stuff, but it is like the, like, you kind of know, maybe no one even thinks about it, but that's probably a good thing if you did it right. It just felt right. So yeah.
I think it's important because it matters to you, you know, like if anything else, you guys like the album, and that's really what matters.
For sure. And yeah. And it's one of those things where, I actually do think that, like, subconsciously, when you listen to an album in full for the first time, like, if the track listing is odd or just, like, it can really, like, make it a bad experience where, like, you might have enjoyed the songs on an individual basis. So I think the way things go into each other and what comes after, you know, a certain song is really important for like keeping you in engaged in like wanting to listen to a whole album.
I think so too. And also something that I thought that was interesting that Ken said in the episode is that the last song on your guys' album is like prime real estate, which is a really funny way to describe it. But I think it's very true, because if you look at all of your records, the last song is like a really important moment on every album. Like, did you guys kind of lean into that this time around as well?
Yeah, I mean, this one's way different than any other song we've ever had for an ending of an album. And I remember, like, John was playing the demo, and we were talking, like, this is so different than all the other ideas that we had had at that time. And we were talking if it made sense to go on the album, and I think I just tossed it out there, like, what if you just ended it with that? And then it's almost like it doesn't matter if it doesn't work with the rest of the album. And then since from that moment on, we just were like dead set that that's how it should go. But the funny thing is then other songs on the album and other vibes ended up kind of making sense with that song. So
yeah, and I think it being last, I think it was there was like a uncomfortableness of that, not of that song. Like Kenny and Jared were like instantly like that has to go on the record. That's so fucking good. And you know, I think me, Pat, and John kind of, you know, coming to the studio every day. It was a demo that he had written for someone else. Like it was just a totally different idea, and like he sang it different, and it just was like so left of center. And we're like, okay, we're cool to. Let's do something like this. But like, if we put it at the end, then we kind of like, you kind of get a freedom to do kind of fully go there and do something like that. Maybe you wouldn't, if it was the third song or like you're going for a single or something, I think it freed it up to be what it actually is and not like try to like mold it into something else.
And the last record, you guys kind of dove back into co-writing a little bit for the first time since Black and White. I know that Andrew Goldstein, formerly of the Friday Night Boys and currently of a lot of different songwriting projects like Black Bear and whatnot, wrote Sticky and High Forever with you. And I know that Colby had some writing credits on a few songs. I know this album was more so like kind of an in-house thing. Did Colby contribute to the writing process at all, or was it just like mainly you guys?
So we actually worked with Andrew again on a couple songs.
Nice.
The first track on the album, which is demo title is Postcard, but that's not what it'll be called. And, Blame, and one or two more. And then Colby, helped out on a handful too, kind of like he always does, where it's like, mm-hmm. we're writing in the room, you know, while we're working on things. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a thing where, yeah, just bringing in another perspective every once in a while is a good thing to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for those that don't know, Andrew Goldstein's a phenomenal songwriter, has worked on a lot of great pop and rock songs. So I think it's something to be excited about personally on my end. John also mentions voice memos in this episode being part of the songs in the album. I know that you dipped some into that on the last record with Dirty Pretty and Face Towards the Sun, which I believe were clips from movies. Do you guys think that these voice memos might play a role in shaping the feeling of the songs that they're on, or what can you tell me about those specifically?
Oh, they definitely do. They're like, I think they're the most... real isn't the right word, but like I don't know, like identifying what the song is actually about.
Mm-hmm.
The voice memos kind of like are what John and it was writing about anyway, and mm-hmm. so they like, I think they really fit really well, so it doesn't feel like kind of placed in there. I love the Dirty Pretty one, but it just felt like a cool vibe in like kind of like a, I don't know, a kind of stony kind of thing to make the song right. feel cool, where these ones were like things that he just found that sample on Dirty Pretty. This one was, you know, things that were from his actual phone. And so, yeah, I think they're very closely tied to his emotional aspect of the record. And yeah, I think, yeah, these ones I think are some of the coolest ones we've done on the transition / kind of like adding that extra texture stuff to the record.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier with the human element of the record. It's like something that you don't always hear in songs, especially because sometimes when people do use it, it feels forced. But I don't think anything you guys have ever done has ever felt forced. Except for maybe like Give It to Me, but that's been like what, 15 years?
I can't
you gotta try stuff.
Yeah, you gotta try stuff for sure.
Absolutely. Also, in this episode, Garrett, you talk about
getting more into textural keyboard sounds and tape loops, and bringing that sound to the table with the main. How are you able to incorporate that some on this record?
I mean, that stuff kind of started in COVID for me with all the downtime we had. I really got into synthesizers, and once you hit that, you start getting bombarded with other things that people do with tape loops and synthesizers, and it's all connected in this unique way. Yeah, but I think, you know, some of that stuff got into it. Like, we used the little cassette player I got. It's a little four-track Tascam to actually pitch something. So we there was a song that we needed the key to go a half step down. So I actually had a tuner up, and we recorded onto tape the outro of a song, and then I actually like physically used, there's a bend knob, so you can actually change the key of the tape, slow it down or speed it up, and I had to speed it up a quarter step so that it can match the next song, so you hear it kind of go So that was just like a cool little trick that we used. I mean, you could have done it on the computer super easy, but it was just like we had these tools, and it was kind of just a fun little experiment. And then the other thing was, we actually used that same tape machine pretty much as like the crazy fuzz guitar that is like kind of all over the record. We overdrove the tape machine, so it distorted like super heavy, and that ended up being kind of our go-to like fuzz sound for the record. It was just little things like that I learned from just watching other people do stuff. I wasn't like cutting up tape or anything like that, but I think it's just kind of a cool element to add, and something just to experiment. You can kind of like, because it's so like agile physical thing, you can kind of fuck with it a little more and make it a little weirder.
Oh yeah, maybe we can expect the main lo-fi study beats coming soon, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I know that one thing that's also focused on this episode is showing the record to Tim, and it's always been like a pivotal moment for you guys whenever you've made a record. And something that you did mention is that he hasn't always been stoked on every album you've shown him, but this one he was on board pretty much right away, from what I understood. Was there any moment when you guys were creating the album, like wondering, like, is he gonna like this? Like, is he gonna hate it? Like, or did you just kind of know that he's gonna vibe with it? Because I'm assuming, Pat, you know him better than anyone else in the band, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know. I think when you're making stuff, you have a gauge a bit, you know, and like you can tell, it's like this one just like this song like for sure is gonna work for most people, and then there's the ones that you're like, this one is either like really gonna work for people and they're gonna really like it, or they're not gonna get it. So on this one, I knew that we for sure at least had a handful of songs that were like no brainers. So I was like pretty confident in that.
Yeah, in that whole, it's funny, we talk about I talk about changing the colors of the room, and he asked for orange because the record that he was weird about was Forever Halloween. And I think we've talked about it, you know, a few times, and it wasn't that he didn't like the record. He just knew it was going to be a hard cycle. It was going to be a more tough time for us to like have people wrap their heads around what we had done. But I remember him liking it. It was just like, oh, okay, this is going to be like an interesting one for us to navigate.
Yeah, I remember Forever Halloween coming out, and I feel like it wasn't immediately received as well as the other records, but then over time, it like gained the fan base that it didn't really have when it came out. Like, did it feel weird to kind of retroactively see the love for that record when you didn't really receive it as much as you maybe would have wanted when it was out originally?
It's super weird. Yeah,
I'm really curious to actually like, because there's a lot of songs in the record that we don't play or we haven't played, and I'm very curious if we do a show where we like, let's just say we're to perform this album in full at some point, like what the reaction actually would be. Because there's a lot of hype on the internet that people are like, this is my favorite album, and I just haven't like witnessed that yet. you know, because during the touring cycle, that is not how it felt.
Oh my God. It was tough. Tim was right to be uneasy about it, because there's a couple tours on that record that were like, fuck, I don't even know if we can do this anymore.
I mean, it was like, sonically, the record felt like you guys could be touring with like a band like Death Cab for Cutie, when you were kind of in a scene of bands that are like, I don't know, like Mayday Parade or Rocket to the Moon, which bands, these bands are great, but they don't really fit the same vibe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm off base saying that, but just the way the record felt. No, I love Death Cab, so.
I think that's what we were shooting for. It was like, I mean, we weren't trying to make, you know, Can't Stop again. We were trying to do something totally different. And yeah, I mean, like Pat said, it would be interesting to play a show and actually see how people react. But it's weird. I think back on like the what was the Forever Halloween the shows called? What did we do? Farewell?
Farewell, yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah, those ones were cool. But yeah, it's hard. It's hard to tell what anyone's going to like or not like. You know, you have no idea. It's not in your hands. You did what you did, you know?
So Funny House is a song that's continuously mentioned throughout this season of Miserable Youth. And from what I hear, this feels like it could be a cool introduction to the record as far as showing your listeners what the album looks like, maybe even like a first song. Have you decided on what the first song out of the gate is going to be? And if not, are you still talking about it, I assume?
So we have figured it out. Funny How took a dramatic turn. I don't know at what point in the process. I guess it was at the cabin, but it definitely sounds nothing like a handful of the iterations that we had. Mm-hmm. It is a lot more like bare bones than that. So it is.
I'd say if you're looking for a song to dance at a wedding to, maybe it's that song.
Remember when you first put out like Numb Without You? How like drastically different it was from the two records before. Like, I thought I knew what to expect, and then that song came out, and I loved it, but I wasn't like what I thought was going to come from you guys. Is it like one of those kind of situations with what the song you guys picked is?
Probably.
So, yeah, I mean, with Postcard, that is the first one on the album, and I mean that one's definitely a roller coaster. I guess kind of in that same like way where it's like, I don't know, each part kind of has its own vibe, so it's just like you're always surprised when the next part comes. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a handful on the album that kind of do that.
Well, my last question is, now that this season's wrapped up for the Miserable Youth web series, how does it feel to have made 9 albums?
Jesus,
crazy. I will say it never gets easier.
I mean, that is the most true statement ever. It does not get fucking easier. But it's because we care so much, you know? Like, it could be easy for us to just go and kind of make something, I don't know, like a bunch of Loved You Littles or a bunch of English Girls's or any of that. Like, but I don't know. If you're trying to do something that feels right to you, it's difficult because you've never done it. So how are you supposed to know how to do it? Like, those other ones are easy now because it's like, oh, we know how to do that. We've done that before. This is hard because this is a whole new kind of take on what we've done. And so when the road is not clear, it can be hard, but I think it's worth it. And I'm really proud of what we've done. And you know, every time I listen to the songs, I still get chills and I still get like, I haven't felt like that for a while where, you know, I hear the end of How to Exit a Room and I'm like built up with emotion and I'm like, holy shit. And like, or, you know, Blame is just like, makes me want to go fucking nuts. Like, so there's all these moments that I think, are important for where our heads are at right now. And I think it's exciting and I'm excited to play these songs for people and just have them hear it and you know, it's up to them now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just so pumped to add to the legacy of the band. Like, I think we made something that is a new chapter in the band that is not just a in between period or like, you know, like this will be a defining time period for the band, regardless of how people respond to it, you know, because it is not just the obvious. This is what you would have done after the last record. So, I'm just so pumped that now we have like another album that has the chance to reach people and to make people respond to it and enjoy it and have it be the soundtrack to a part of their lives. And, you know, I think like you only get that opportunity if you're trying to do something that pushes the limits of what you've done before. You know, you really won't get that emotion out of people if you just like did a rehashed version of what you've done before. So, you know, I don't really know, like, I don't know how many more times you can do that, you know, before you've done everything. And it's hard to, make people feel that again, you know? So it's like, I really like am proud that like one more time we did it. Like we were able to make a record that is its own piece, you know? So.
Absolutely. And I think something that is very evident with The Main is that you guys have always maintained a level of authenticity that a lot of other bands don't do as well as you guys. Not naming anyone, but I'm just saying it's very evident how much work and how much care you put into every record release, down to the flow of the songs, like we talked about, like the human element to the record, like the art direction, like even the pre-order packages. You guys really put a lot of heart into everything, and I think it's going to be very evident when people hear this record, even though I have not heard a single note of it other than what's on these little videos. So yeah.
Well, thank you for doing this with us, and
absolutely
it's been a good time, and like, yeah, fun to talk about where we're headed, and you know, and kind of in like time when we don't even have all the answers yet. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah. I was honored that Garrett asked, and I would happily do it again if you guys need anything else.
Awesome.
Heck yeah.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
I want to thank you again for listening to these last 5 episodes, and give a special shout out to Garrett and Pat from The Main for having me on the 8123 podcast to help guide these studio update follow-ups. Stay tuned to the band's respective outlets for more information as Album 9 continues moving along. I'm honored to have been here with you, and it's been an absolute blast. Again, I've been your temporary co-host, Tyler Common. You can find me on social media under the username @NoveltySongs. Signing out, and maybe you'll see me for Album 10. Thank you, and good night.